With that said, I want to welcome to the program again our friend John Green, Executive Director of the Working Families Party of Connecticut. Thanks for being here with us, John.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
It's great to have you here on the occasion of a big victory for the Working Families Party of Connecticut and the allies you worked with for the passage of a bill that mandates a specific set of private sector employees in the state of Connecticut to provide their employees with paid sick days. It's the first time this has been done in any state in the nation, and you guys certainly deserve a lot of credit, and I know it was a lot of hard work, and we've been following this here and there over the last bunch of months, and, you know, when somehow, I guess, as progressives, sometimes we get beaten at these things, that you know, these good pieces of legislation, you get beaten so often, you kind of, I guess, you know, you're kind of like, you raise your head up and go, we won one of these? I mean, that's amazing.
I feel that way to us.
Yeah, no, but anyway, John, tell us a bit about this bill, what it will do, and when it will take effect, and all the nuts and bolts questions of how this will change the way at least some employers will be doing business in the state of Connecticut.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me on the show. Let me just start with that, and you've been great in promoting our organization and this issue, and it's definitely appreciated. So, you know, the issue of paid sick days is one that I think a lot of people do tend to take for granted, certainly sort of white-collar employees or professional employees, you know, mostly get paid sick leave and kind of assume that other people do as well. But the reality is that among hourly employees and especially low-wage employees, an astonishingly high percentage do not receive any paid sick leave. Among low-income workers, it's about three-quarters of low-wage workers who don't receive any paid sick time. And so, you know, that means, look, the reality is people do get sick. And without any paid sick leave, you know, an illness or needing to bring your child to the doctor can cost you a day's pay or more. You know, a serious illness, flu, or any kind of serious medical issue can cost your job. And especially, you know, with the economy the way it is, with people really struggling to hold on to what they've got, it's all that much more important to make sure that people aren't having to make these horrible choices between their health and their income, or between, you know, being a good employee versus being a good parent. And so what this bill will do, I think it's not asking for an enormous amount, but it allows employees to earn up to 5 paid sick days per year. The paid sick time is earned on an accrual basis. So employees will earn 1 hour of paid sick leave for every 40 hours that they work, up to a maximum of 40 hours annually. And that time can be used to recuperate from an illness, to care for a child or a spouse when they have an illness, for medical appointments, or to get you know, services relating to an incidence of family violence or sexual assault. So for those reasons, you know, this will make I think the lives of several hundred thousand, mostly low-wage employees, mostly women, make their lives a little bit easier in that they'll have a little bit of economic security when they happen to become ill. I think there's also a very important public health aspect to this policy, because what we have found is that the employees who tend to not have paid sick leave are concentrated in exactly the industries where you wouldn't want people coming to work sick. So, for example, daycare providers or home health care aides or nursing home workers or restaurant employees, these are the occupations that have the least paid sick leave coverage currently. And under this bill, many of those employees will now have this benefit. So it's not just a question of fairness for the employee, it's also a question of health. You know, do you want the person who is taking care of your child at the daycare center or taking care of a parent or grandparent in a nursing home, do you want that person to feel compelled to come to work when they have an illness? It's just sort of common sense that that shouldn't happen.
I think a lot of people, including myself, you know, we were first talking about this, said, you know, I guess in the back of people's minds, a lot of people who maybe have sick days on the job, that everybody does, that there must be some law somewhere. And
right.
It's amazing to hear that, you know, of course, it wasn't a law in the state of Connecticut. It's not a law in the federal books, and it's not a law anywhere in the country until now.
You know, you're correct. I mean, there was, you know, we're sort of a trendsetter here. There was a policy put into effect through a referendum in San Francisco a number of years ago. But, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a funny little anecdote. The bill passed in the House of Representatives a week ago this past Saturday at, you know, like 3 in the morning. It was one of these long overnight sort of filibuster attempts from the Republicans, and eventually got a vote at 3 in the morning. And that evening, Saturday evening, I happened to have had my high school, like, 20-year reunion, so I went back and was telling some of my old classmates about, you know, what just happened. And people looked at me like I was crazy, like, who doesn't get paid sick days? Again, that's not already a law. And it was, sort of took a little of the wind out of my sails because people were sort of unimpressed. They just thought this was already the case. But you're right. People just assume that, you know, how can this not already be on the books?
Mm. Well, I guess it speaks a lot to the influence of these big corporations and even the, you know, the medium-sized bosses who don't want to give their employees sick days. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the your allies and your opponents in this fight.
Right. Well, we definitely have a lot of people, organizations as well as elected officials, who deserve a great deal of thanks and credit for, you know, being with us every step of the way. I think it does make sense to sort of start at the top. And, you know, Governor Malloy was genuinely a leader on this issue. People might remember, you know, a year ago when he was running initially in the Democratic primary and then later in the general election. This was an issue that came up in press interviews, in some of the debates, and you know, pretty much every candidate for governor, almost every candidate other than Dan Malloy, actually was on the other side of this issue. They tended to side with the business community and the chambers of commerce, and they thought it was, you know, even someone like Ned Lamont, I think, thought it was a way to kind of show that they're pro-business or show that they're moderate. And candidate Dan Malloy went in a different direction and said that this was something he supported and believed in, and really stuck with that. You know, he went to the business community the very beginning of the legislative session and said this is one of the things we're just going to disagree about. Later on in the session, as the kind of battle heated up, he was actually willing to go out and talk to some, you know, wavering state legislators in the House and the Senate and say, look, this is something I believe in and hope you'll join me in supporting it. And, you know, wasn't successful every time, but definitely made the effort and I think did help persuade some people or reassure some people that this was good public policy. So I think that's, you know, extremely important to recognize that having not just a Democratic governor, but someone who was willing to really put himself out there on this issue made a big difference. And no doubt, you know, Speaker Chris Donovan in the House of Representatives, extremely progressive leader in the state assembly, and then Senate President Pro Tem Donald Williams, both of them also, I think, deserve a lot of credit for really ushering this through. It was, by most accounts, the most heavily lobbied bill of maybe of the past several years in reality, and I think that they did a great job of kind of keeping people, kind of keeping their caucus together, keeping people feeling positive about it. And then there were a whole host of other grassroots organizations and advocacy groups, and I'm sure I'll, you know, forget some or leave some out, so I won't pretend to do like a whole comprehensive list, but I would start by recognizing the state's Permanent Commission on the Status of Women and their executive director, Teresa Younger, who I think was one of the real leaders over the long term on this issue. Some of the service employees, international union locals, particularly the janitors local 32BJ, brought people up to the Capitol, brought people out to rallies. You know, the AARP got involved in this in the campaign this year, and I think that was, you know, something that I think legislators didn't always see the connection between this issue and public health, and they helped make that clear because they represent, you know, senior citizens who don't want to have sick people taking care of them in nursing homes or home health care settings. So from the consumer perspective, they brought a different and important voice to the table. And there were lots of other organizations, and so I should probably apologize for not being able to name all of them. But one of the things I will say that, you know, in terms of lessons we learned about this, is that having a broad, diverse coalition, in our case that included physicians, public health advocates, anti-poverty organizations, labor organizations, women's organizations, you know, a whole wide range of different groups that all had a common interest in seeing this legislation come to fruition. I think that was, you know, really important, but also, you know, just sort of gratifying to be able to work with such a diverse range of organizations.
And, John, who were the opponents arrayed against the paid sick leave bill?
Well, it seems like everybody else. And it was very, very intense opposition lobbying effort. Certainly leading the charge from the opposition would have to be the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. You know, along with them were groups like the Connecticut Restaurant Association and the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. A few that were a little maybe more surprising to the average citizen, you know, the YMCAs lobbied very heavily against this bill. They ultimately were exempted from the bill, but they, you know, vehemently did not want to have to offer paid sick leave to their daycare employees. And, you know, that's something I think we're going to continue to look at and maybe revisit in the future. But, you know, there were some nonprofit organizations, some of the state's larger employers, Stop and Shop, even though they actually provide much more generous paid leave policies than what this bill requires. We found that a lot of the industries and sort of corporate interests tended to sort of close ranks on a philosophical, ideological basis in opposition to this bill. You know, there was even some last-minute lobbying from, you know, the national vice president for Burger King, sending an email to every member of the General Assembly urging them to vote against the bill, you know, which we sort of thought maybe was helpful, because I don't think people have that much sympathy for a huge corporation like that. And I don't, you know, it was sort of, people didn't want their burgers to be phlegm broiled. So that was a convenient, convenient hook for us.
That's pretty nasty, John. Phlegm broiled. All right. Well, we're speaking with John Green, Executive Director of the Working Families Party of Connecticut. We're talking about their recent victory, the passage of a bill mandating paid sick days for employees in certain sectors. And, John, what would you say the most significant compromise that had to be made in order to get passage of this bill?
Well, I did mention that, you know, some certain nonprofits were excluded, particularly the YMCAs, which is unfortunate. You know, the legislative process is a process of compromise. I think that, and that definitely, you know, this is no exception. There was certainly negotiation and give and take along the way. The biggest change in the bill by far was that it was narrowed to really apply to service workers. So it's not universal, doesn't cover every employee in the state. It does apply to businesses with 50 or more employees, which is similar to the way the Family Medical Leave Act works. And it applies to service workers. Now, that's been reported as, you know, in various media, sort of a major concession, but I got to tell you, when we look at the practical side of this in terms of which types of employees would genuinely benefit from this bill, we're really talking about service workers anyway. What we found is that in the manufacturing sector or in, you know, IT or utilities or other, you know, higher paying jobs, most of these employees, the vast majority, were already receiving benefits that were comparable to what this bill required. It really was in the service industry when you talk about restaurant workers and school bus drivers and daycare providers and home health aides. That's where we really found that these benefits weren't being provided by the employer. So, my view is that focusing on those workers was really, that just meant we were covering the people who don't have it now. Didn't seem like an enormous amount to give up in terms of substance, but I do think, from the point of view of sort of symbolism or the cosmetics of it, it was helpful in terms of getting the bill passed.
We're speaking tonight with John Green, Executive Director of the Working Families Party of Connecticut, and talking about the paid sick leave bill that passed and will soon be signed into law. This takes effect in January, John?
Right, beginning January 1st. And so any if you're, if you're currently employed by your employer, you can begin to accrue paid sick leave starting January 1st. And anyone who is hired after January 1st, that's from the date that you're hired, you begin to accrue paid sick leave. Your employers can impose a probationary period before people can use paid sick leave. They can say you have to work, something like, I think it's 680 hours before you can use any of the time that you've accrued. That comes out to about 4 months for a full-time employee. So, starting around May of 2012, employees will begin to be able to start using paid sick leave that they've begun to accrue under this bill.
John, as you said, you had some powerful opponents here, and you beat them. Do you anticipate any legal challenges to this legislation, either through the courts or other kinds of maneuvers that you may have detected out there?
You never know. We haven't heard that raised as a possibility quite yet. It doesn't seem likely that any legal challenge would prevail. We've got a pretty convincing legal opinion that this is, both constitutional under the state constitution and not preempted by any federal law. So I don't think we're terribly worried about that. The other thing I got to tell you is that the when you actually do the math, the cost to employers of providing paid sick leave to their employees, it really turns out to be a very, very small cost. And so although there was an enormous amount of kind of vitriol directed from the lobbying organizations and the chambers and some Republicans against this bill, I think what we believe is going to happen, similar to what happened in San Francisco after their policy took effect, employers are really just going to figure out this is not such a big deal, and they'll move on. I think what employers who currently don't provide paid sick leave, they will learn, what the vast majority of employers already know, which is that this is not costly. Over time, it's likely to help those employers reduce turnover because it will build greater loyalty and improve morale in their workforce. It will reduce the spread of illnesses in those workplaces, which is also going to lead to an improvement in productivity. Some of these are efficiencies and savings that are a little bit hard to measure. They're not really necessarily big money savers, but the costs are not very big either. So I think at the end of the day, the majority of employers are just going to say, all right, and that's what we do, and now we move on.
John, it was interesting. The New York Times put this victory on a front-page article about states run by all Democrats, legislature and the governor, and other states like Wisconsin that are run by all Republicans, right, and the kind of difficulties they're having there. What's been the reaction nationally to this groundbreaking legislation, John? You have a lot of interest from cities and states who want to try something similar in their own backyard?
I think it's definitely beginning to sort of percolate up in a bigger way than it has in the past. One thing I do want to mention just about the New York Times piece. Connecticut was sort of like you said, sort of described as like the anti-Wisconsin. I think that makes a lot of sense. We have to recognize, though, that there are other democratically controlled states that have not moved in quite the same direction as Connecticut has, that have been more inclined to go with the flow of, you know, what may be seen as a hopefully temporary, you know, rightward drift in the country. And so I think it, you know, merits asking, why are we seeing Connecticut move in a different direction, even more so than some other Democratic states? And I think it's probably, you know, we should recognize the role that our campaign finance reform laws and public financing of elections plays in contributing to that. I think that also, you know, having the kind of election laws that allow for something like the Working Families Party and the strategy of cross-endorsement that allows for a group like ours to, you know, be out there supporting progressive candidates, but doing so in a way that really translates into, you know, issue gains like this one. So I think that there's some, you know, we have to look at the rules of the game that allow Connecticut to sort of leap ahead. But back to the question, you know, look, Philadelphia is considering a paid sick leave policy that I think will be voted on by their city council within the next couple of weeks. I think in New York City, there's a rebirth of interest in this issue. You know, they're going to have mayoral elections coming up not too far down the road, and people are beginning to look at themselves and position themselves. And this is one of those big issues that is going to help define that race. And I think, you know, the overwhelming majority of New Yorkers strongly support a paid sick days policy, and I think that's going to play out in the municipal politics of New York and will likely lead to a victory there sometime relatively soon. And there's places like Seattle and Denver that are considering this. I think Massachusetts, in terms of states, Massachusetts could well be the next state to do it. You know, you got to remember, looking at things like child labor laws or the 40-hour work week, many of these policies, again, you know, things we just sort of take for granted now, began at the state level, in some cases more than 150, 160 years ago, and it took time, but over a period of decades, those policies became the norm and ultimately federal law. I expect that something like paid sick days will follow a similar trajectory.
Yeah, sadly, we note that the state of Maine is trying to dismantle their child labor laws.
Right.
Some very crazy things going on in some states around the country.
It's a tough time. You know, I think it makes the victory here in Connecticut all that much more sort of worth savoring. You know, you look at places like New Jersey and Wisconsin, clearly Maine, you know, the trend is really towards rolling back protections that working people have enjoyed for many decades. But I'll tell you, you know, this is one of the things the New York Times, I think, sort of pointed out, and other news outlets have pointed out. When Wisconsin began rolling back workers' rights, there were massive protests, people occupying the Capitol, you know, for months, weeks on end, efforts to recall members of the legislature. You know, the passage of paid sick days has been criticized by Republicans. It's been criticized by business lobbyists. It's, you know, been criticized on some editorial pages. But the population is not up in arms. You know, the population of Connecticut, I think, views this as a thing that we should be quite proud of. So, you know, some of these things, the pendulum is going to swing back. But I think if you think about the way the public feels about regulations that protect working people, these types of protections enjoy very broad public support, especially, you know, when they're crafted reasonably, as I think the Connecticut policy is. You know, there's not a great deal of opposition among the electorate. In fact, when we go out and knock on doors and talk to people, which we do a lot, as I think you know, you know, this policy is something that enjoys a great deal broad support and also very deep and, you know, passionately held conviction. People really do feel like this is the right thing to do for our state.
Well, John, this is great. Thank you for being here and talking about this victory.
As well, you have pleasure so much to talk about a win, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But leaving off on public opinion is important because I was actually going to ask you the same thing. Because too many politicians, of course, won't risk their political career, their votes, whatever they think it's going to take to remain in office, they will put their finger up in the air, and even if something's clearly right, they may not always have the courage to stand up for it. So I think it speaks to the popularity of things like the minimum protections that we're talking about here with paid sick days for very low-paid employees. And again, thanks so much for being here with us tonight and all that you do at Working Families Party of Connecticut. And it would be great to have our listeners copy down the web address for the website of
sure.
Working Families so they can find out a little bit more what else you do.
I appreciate you giving me that opportunity. So people can look us up at www.ct-workingfamilies.org. And again, that's www.ct-workingfamilies.org. And Scott, thanks so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
Well, it's fun to talk about a victory, as we always like to do.
Yep.
We'll hope for many more. Thanks, John.
Thanks a bunch. Take care.
Bye-bye. John Green, Executive Director of the Working Families Party of Connecticut, talking about their success with the paid sick leave bill. Well, it'll be taking effect in January.